Welcome to the RacingTV.com preview podcast ahead of the 241st running of the Investec Derby, the highlight of a brilliant weekend of racing that will be brought to you live here on Racing TV. This will be a weekend of racing that is probably never likely to happen again, with the Investec Oaks and the Derby and the Coral Eclipse all set to take place just within the space of 24 hours. But it's the Derby, the world's most famous flat race, the one that we has produced some of those commentaries that we just heard, that we are going to focus on here. And I have three expert guests joining me to do just that. Dave Yates, a regular face on Racing TV. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Will. How are things?
Yeah, very good. Good to hear from you. Ben Fernley, from joining us from Timeform, and also a regular face on Racing TV. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Will. Good to be here.
And finally, last but not least, Andy Stevens, also known as The Score, regularly seen popping up on RatingTV.com with his tips, with his profit-making tips. And Andy, you've already had a good look at the Derby on RatingTV.com, haven't you?
I have, yes. Gone in early with it and had a look at all the runners. It's a tricky one, isn't it? Let's get our excuses in first. It's all a bit of a muddle. But anyway, we'll see what we can come up with in the next half an hour or so.
Do you have a favourite Epsom moment out of all the meetings you've attended, Dave?
I don't think I've got a single one. I suppose, you know, Fallon's ride on Chris Kinn was very special in 2003. Frankie on Authorised in 2007 was pretty amazing as well. I think those are probably my two favourite ones.
What about you, Ben? Is there an Epsom highlight that stands out for you in your time in racing?
Probably one of the, I'm going to make myself sound young, but one of the first derbies that I really paid full attention to was Port Noirs in 2011. I've been mainly National Hunt fan prior to that, and that was the first one I really enjoyed and knew what was going on, etc. And that was a dramatic race as well, with obviously Carlton House being nailed by Port Noir, the French raider, who came about five or six horses wide into the straight, didn't look like he was getting there. And obviously the jockey was up on his feet celebrating as the horse crossed the line. So that'll always be a race that sticks in my memory.
One of those great commentary moments from Richard Hoyles, wasn't it? One of those sort of classic moments where the brain and the mouth aligns at once and the line is delivered correctly, and it was all just lined up perfectly.
Yeah. Well, he's had plenty of those, hasn't he? But that was definitely one of them.
And Andy, what about yourself? Have you got an Epsom highlight that you recall particularly fondly?
Yeah, I guess they're all special in their way, aren't they? I'll always recall 1986 with Shara Starney. I think that serves to all us punters as a permanent reminder that of the perils of punting, isn't it, really? We're dancing brave, coming with that late sort of thrust and never quite getting there under Greville Starkey, you know, and a reminder that the best horse doesn't always win. That was a fantastic race, and Walter Swinburne was brilliant on the winner. And 1990 for me was a special one. I actually had my stag do. That was on the good old days, of course, when the Derby was on a Wednesday. And we started drinking, I think, at 7:30 a.m. in the morning, finished at 11:30 p.m. at night. And there were some horses in the midst of it all as well. I'll always remember I was under all kinds of humiliating acts were going to be bestowed on me if I didn't have the win of the first race, which we all agreed to back. And thank goodness I managed to pick out Clive Britton's Silver Honda, which won the Woodcut at 7-8-1. Clive's always been an absolute hero of mine, and he went up even more in my estimations that day, it has to be said. And Quest for Fame, of course, won the Derby later on. But I'm not sure I remember too much about that, to be honest, by that stage.
Let's get on with talking about this year's Investec Derby on Saturday. And we'll crack on straight away by talking about the horse that's at the top of the market, English King, trained by Ed Walker. We're going to hear from Ed Walker now. He's going to start off by telling us that Frankie went down to have a sit on the horse the other day.
He's not a horse you need to see or expect to see blasting clear of his lead horse in Frankel bullet train style. I was lucky enough to watch that horse work a number of times, and always feared that if that's what it took to have a Group 1 horse, I probably never would have one. And this guy is the complete opposite. You know, he does what he has to do. He's not a flashy workhorse. And that was kind of the thing I was most nervous about Frankie coming down, was that he might not impress Frankie, you know. But Frankie's ridden so many horses of so many different types, and flashy workhorses, unflashy workhorses. You know, Frankie doesn't really care. Frankie just wanted to come down and get a feel for the horse. And yeah, he really liked him. He rode him from his stable back to his stable, which, you know, is kind of quite rare really for jockeys to come in and ride a horse and work. You know, he really wanted to get inside the horse's head and understand him, which is a mark of Frankie's professionalism. And yeah, so he rode him for, you know, what, over an hour, and they got on great, and yeah, he was very happy, so we're all happy. I'm at home, he was always just a nice, good-looking, athletic horse who did everything asked of him very nicely. Like I've said a lot, he's not flashy at home. Very good-looking, but not a flashy workhorse. And with Bjorn, Bjorn's a great guy to train for because everything is about the Derby. He's either trying to produce fillies to produce him a Derby winner, or he's trying to race colts to win the Derby. It's a very simple remit, really. So when you're sent a colt by Bjorn Nielsen, you kind of work backwards from the Derby. And it hasn't worked out too many times for me, but this time so far it has. And, you know, so he's quite easy to train for like that. And after Newcastle, we thought, you know, it's a case of keeping the bubble intact, really. And we ticked that box at Newcastle and go on to the next step, and then won the Derby trial as we did. And you know, really, I mean, like the rest of the world, I think he was, I think you could probably back him at about 100-1. I think my assistant got a few quid on it, on Betfair going into Lingfield. And he was whatever price he was afterwards. So I think really all of us didn't see him quite as good a candidate as he is in Tollingfield.
You've mentioned you saw Frankel and Bullet Train burning up the gallops, your time at Luca Comani's, he's obviously associated with two Derby winners in his career. Instinctively, in terms of horses that you've seen in your relatively short career to date, it's probably quite hard because he's by all accounts not a flashy workhorse, but instinctively, the latent talent of English King, where would you sort of rank him?
Yeah, I mean, I'm massively excited, and I wouldn't swap him. It sounds mad. I wouldn't swap him for a Guineas winner, but I wouldn't. You know, I think he's got everything it takes. I always vowed I'd never run a horse in the Derby who didn't really deserve his place, because it can be. We all know. We've all seen nice horses get ruined in that race. It can be, you know, a graveyard for a nice horse. And so yeah, I'm very, very hopeful. Well, very confident that I've got a horse that is, you know, genuinely deserves to take his chance. Whether or not he's good enough, we'll find out. But he ticks a huge amount of boxes, and I think that's why he's at the top of the market, because he has only won a listed race, and Gamaco's won a couple of Group Ones, including a Guineas. But English King does tick a lot of boxes.
That was Ed Walker telling us a bit about English King and how he's got to the head of the market for the Investec Derby. He finished off there by saying that he's a horse who just ticks a lot of boxes. Dave, does he tick a lot of your boxes in terms of a potential Derby winner?
Yes, I think he does. Again, this not being a normal year, the trials haven't been as we would have expected. You know, the King Edward VII Stakes at Royal Ascot was a Derby trial rather than a Derby consolation. Obviously, the Dante at York we didn't have. And I thought that the Lingfield Derby trial, I thought that was a perfectly likeable trial by English King. He beat Berkshire Rocco a cozy couple of lengths. Berkshire Rocco is no star, but is a good yardstick. And I thought that was, I thought that was a really likable performance. Ed Walker says the horse doesn't really do an awful lot at home, so they don't know how good he is. He travelled really strongly before putting the race to bed. And so, yeah, I thought there was much to like about it.
Andy, you hint in your Racing TV website piece that I read that he's a bit of a surprising favourite, really, in that he's perhaps not as sexy as we would expect the Derby favourite to be most years. For a start, he's not trained by Aidan O'Brien, which in itself is something unusual. But are you surprised by quite how short he's ended up being in the betting?
Yeah, I am. I can't really understand it. He was 40-1 before Lingfield. Wasn't on many radars before the race. I mean, obviously, you know, he did win in very, very good style. But let's remember that Aidan wasn't allowed to bring his horses over for that trial, so it was just the English horses. There wasn't any Godolphin runners. I don't think there was a, there wasn't a Johnny Gosden runner in there. There wasn't great depth to the race, so there was a lot of style about it, but I think it just lacks a little bit of substance. I'm not saying he can't win. I'm not saying he's not a lovely horse, but the price for me is wrong at sort of 9-4, 5-2. I couldn't be entertaining him at that price.
Ben, where does he sit with Time for? What did Time for make of that Linkfield performance? There didn't seem to be a huge amount of depth to it, but it was undoubtedly pretty stylish.
Well, the thing about it was at least run at a pretty sound gallop, which meant the two horses that were probably the two to take out of the race, there was a lot of limited animals, a few limited animals in behind, you'd have to say. But the two that sort of you wanted to see come clear, the joint favourites, English King and Berkshire Rocco, they got a good pace to aim at, and they did indeed come a long way clear of the field. So I'd be with Andy. I don't think it's a particularly... it wasn't a deep race. I'm surprised that he's as short as he is. If you sort of, a friend made a point to me with, obviously, without wanting to offend any of the connections involved, if you squinted at that race and pretended it was a 0-75 handicap at Lingfield and not a Derby trial, then, you know, just in terms of the colours and the connections involved, you wouldn't be that surprised, really. So it probably was a case of style over substance, but there was plenty of style to the performance. And we know he stays the trip. It was a good test of stamina, and he's got stamina on his side. And when you're looking at some of the other contenders here, stamina is definitely a question mark, and it isn't for English King.
Let's move on to one of those horses about whom there is a stamina question mark about, and that's the Kitco 2000 Guineas winner, Kimiko. We're going to hear from Ollie Bell talking to Andrew Balding now, and he starts off by reminding him that it's 49 years since Mill Reef won this same race for the same stable, and asking whether Kimiko can emulate Mill Reef.
Andrew, it's 49 years, as I'm sure you know, since Mill Reef won the Derby. And Do you think it's fair to say that this year, despite having a number of chances in the past, you've had five runners in it in the past, this year provides you with your best opportunity of winning the Derby?
Well, we'd like to think so, but we've had five runners in the past and five disappointments, big disappointments. So I'm sort of a little bit more relaxed about it than we would have been, because I don't want to get myself too excited like I did last year. But obviously, Ollie, we've got a strong candidate. Yeah, I think Guineas winner going to the Derby's got to warrant respect in any year.
What is the team's feeling about staying the trip, the mile and a half?
Look, you obviously, there is no way of knowing until you try. And I don't think, you know, that if my dad was sort of saying, why don't you gallop him over a mile and a half? Because that's what they used to do back in the day. And I think probably Mill Reef between the Guineas and the Derby did work over a mile and a half. But to be honest, you can't really find that out at home. It's just something you've got to suck it and see. And look, if he doesn't stay, and we'll be dropping back in trip. But he relaxes very well. Kitten's Joy, funny enough, is deemed a sort of influence for stamina in America, but obviously a very different, you know, different model of racing. Mixed messages in his pedigree. There are Revers or Kill Me, if I keep saying it, but Alderbrook's in the third dam, you know, won a champion hurdle. So it's not... You know, there's mixed messages in the pedigree, but I think the key, Ollie, to me, is the horse relaxes really well. He settles well, and that's got to give you a chance if you're going to try it. But it's an extra half mile, but he was hitting the line strongest of all in the Guineas. Well, I'm running another horse called Khalifa Sat, who won the Coptat Stakes, who's a horse we think a lot of, who stays well. And as long as the ground's fast, he'll hopefully run there. And as with every Derby, there's probably going to be 14 horses there, and you wouldn't be fall over in amazement if any of them won, I imagine, or any of them were capable of winning on the day.
Just so you wouldn't fall over in amazement if Khalifa Sat beat Kamiko in the Derby?
Well, I would be very surprised. The only reason he would beat Kamiko if Kamiko didn't stay would be the only reason. Fine, admirable, talented horse that he is. He's Kamiko has you know, different gears to any horse I've ever trained before.
Really?
Yeah, and that's you know, I mean, we use the timing system on our fast work, and you know, he's got exceptional ability.
So that was Ollie Bell talking to Andrew Balding. interesting to hear Andrew there describe this horse as having exceptional ability, saying that no horse he's ever trained before can do the things that Kamiko can do at home. Andy, what sort of store do you put when a trainer says these kinds of things? You know, he's like nothing we've ever had before in the yard.
It depends on the individual, doesn't it? I think for Andrew, I thought he put himself under a huge amount of pressure before the Guineas, because he's not one for those bold statements or outlandish kind of comments. So I think you did have to sort of sit up and take notice when, you know, he didn't have to volunteer all that information. And for me, I thought he put himself under pressure before the Guineas in that he had built the horse up, but the horse, you know, done the speaking for him on the race course. And since then, Andrew, again, has still been, it just sounds like the model racehorse that he's got on his hands there. The trip is the question mark, isn't it? It was quite funny before the Guineas, Andrew was talking about the horse, and even then he was talking about the Derby, and he mentioned that he kept looking, poring over the horse's pedigree, and he'd noticed that Alderbrook was on the dam side of his breeding, and that gave him hope and confidence. I didn't like to point out to him though that although Alderbrook won a champion hurdle in really good style, his best form on the flat was definitely over a mile and a quarter. Every time he ran over a mile and a half or further, he got beat. So the one horse that he's clutching onto, actually, if you look at him on the flat, you know, a lovely smashing horse, wasn't he, Alderbrook? But did have some stamina limitations himself. So I think he's the best horse in the race in terms of natural ability, but you've got to stay every inch, haven't you? At Epsom, and it's sure to be a stiff test. No hiding places for the horse. If he's, I mean, he could run well below the form of his Guineas win, maybe, and still win. He's sort of 7-8 pound clear top on, I think, on official ratings. But again, with the price and the doubts, I'd be looking elsewhere. But equally, I can still see him absolutely swinging on the bridle 2 furlongs out. And if you're one of the in running player that you want a back to lay, he's got to trade shorter and running, I'm sure, at some stage.
Ben, when you watched Kamiko win the 2000 Guineas, initially straight after the race, were you thinking Derby, or were you thinking stick at a mile and 10 furlongs with this horse?
I think he'll stay, to be honest. I don't know whether it will be his optimum trip, but I think he'll stay. Obviously, you've already touched on the dam side of the pedigree. There are other jump horses in there as well. There's a 3 mile hurdler trained by Jessica Harrington. If you root around enough in that pedigree, and I think just his style, the way that he goes through his races, I think he's quite a relaxed individual over a mile, and that's good to see. Yes, he's been in 2 well-run races, which have probably helped him to settle, and we don't know what will happen if they go and stop-start in this race, and maybe he'll pull for his head. But I think just his demeanour, the way that he went through the race in the Guineas, he was chased into the bridle once or twice in the sort of middle part of the race. He looks relaxed. There are plenty of sort of certainly promise that he'll, on the dam side, that mean that he'll probably at least stay the trip. Whether he'll relish it, we'll have to wait and see. But I think it's easy to draw comparison with him and Roaring Lion, who obviously was also by Kitten's Joy. Roaring Lion did stay the Derby trip. He didn't run to his absolute optimum, but he did stay it. He ran to a time form rating in the low 120s. And I think he was a more sort of buzzy individual, really, than Kamiko. I think Kamiko is a more relaxed type. And I suspect that he will actually probably be better than Roaring Lion over a mile and a half. Roaring Lion might well end up being the higher rated over a mile and a quarter. But I think it's easy to draw those comparisons, given the sire and given the connections. Certainly the owner's obviously the same. I think he'll stay, and I think he should be favourite, to be honest. I don't know why he's sort of 4-1. I would have him and English King the other way round, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Currently looking at the Investec Derby betting with the official betting partners of the race, Unibet. English King 5-2 favourite, Kamiko 4-1 second favourite. Dave, any thoughts as to whether you think the right horse is favourite or whether you think Kamiko should be at the head of the market?
I think it's probably hard to separate the two, to be honest, Will. They've got very different profiles. Obviously, English King's win last time is in a listed race where it's more style than substance. Truly, if we take the Dante aside, a Group 2 for one moment, the Guineas is always, well, in fact, including the Dante, the Guineas is the Derby trial with the most substance, isn't it? Because it's a classic. I've got my doubts about Kimiko at a mile and a half. I suspect that 10 might be his optimum trip. And what Ben said about staying is really interesting, because I think, you know, even going back further into the Derby, I remember a horse called Doyoon in, I think, 1988, who ran behind Kayasi and made the frame, but obviously we talk of them as staying without saying that 12 furlongs is their optimum trip. And I think that Kimiko might fit into that category, that at the end of the race, if he's on the podium, you'd say, well, he stayed a mile and a half very well, or he stayed a mile and a half, but he didn't stay it as well as the horses in front of him. I think that could be the case here. I can see stronger stayers in the race.
That's an interesting point, isn't it? The idea that, you know, I think I probably fall into that trap of a pigeonholing Roaring Lion as a classic non-stayer in the Derby, in that he looked to be going so well two furlongs out. But as Ben says, you know, ultimately ran to a very high level. I suppose it's semantics whether you say he saw out the trip or didn't see out the trip. He produced a top-class performance either way. Like you, I guess my fear with Kimiko is that he can run up to a decent level over a mile and a half, but perhaps not quite show the same level of brilliance.
The concept of staying is a bit like the concept of training on, isn't it? Is that people want it to be black and white, like a light switch, to say, did he train on? Yes. No. Did he stay? Yes. No. Whereas, in fact, in both cases, there are degrees. You know, you can't... with Pinatubo, he's finished placed in a Guineas and second, obviously third in a Guineas, second in a St. James's Palace Stakes. Has he trained on? Well, yeah, of course he's trained on. It's just he's not quite as he's just not as dominant at three as he was at two. And I think a similar principles apply to whether horses stay or not.
Let's keep moving on and look at three other possible Investec Derby candidates. These are all horses who ran last time out at Royal Ascot, and to greater or lesser extent enhanced or otherwise their profiles. We've got Highland Chief, trained by Team Cole, Paul and Oliver Cole, Mohican Heights, and a Pile Driver, trained by William Muir and ridden by Racing TV's occasional correspondent, Martin Dwyer. Guys, any of these three, do you give a squeak to any of these three, Andy?
Short answer, no. Highland Chief really won off 101, didn't he, at Ascot? If you're going to be winning a derby, you've got to be winning handicaps off that mark, albeit he come from a long way back. He's only ever run on soft ground, so he wouldn't be for me. Mohican Heights is an interesting horse. I think he's similar really to Mogul in the King Edward run. He was not particularly well placed as the race was run. He's got a sort of middle distance pedigree. We don't really know how good he is. And Pole Driver, I mean, yeah, fantastic story. It'd be fantastic to see him run well for William Muir and Martin. You know, only 10,000 guineas, wouldn't have been in the Derby probably in a normal year. He's fit and he's in form, but my reservation with him was that he looked all at sea on the Rolly Mole when he ran in the Royal Lodge last year, and I'd have reservations about the track suiting him.
Right, before we go on, we're going to hear from Martin Dwyer, who's talking to us about both his great day in the Derby before aboard Sir Percy and what he makes about Pile Driver's prospects this year.
It's exciting. I'm really looking forward to it. It's like you say, 14 years, that just... it's an indication of how hard it is to find a horse good enough. But I've got the experience. I've been very lucky around Epsom. I've had a lot of success there. So I'd like to think I've got that on my side. Having a good horse to ride. And we've got a lot of boxes ticked. So just need a bit of luck on the day. It's the biggest race in the world. And every jockey wants to win the Derby. And when you walk through those gates with Leicester Piggott, you know, his 9 Derby winners. And it's a special place. It's a difficult track to ride, and it's, you feel like you've achieved something winning a Derby, and it raises the hairs on the back of your neck when you walk in on Derby day. And this year it'll be very exciting.
What's he like, Pile Driver?
He's a lovely horse. Hat off to William. He's always had faith in him, and the horse is progressing. I never had him down as a Group 1 horse. Last year he was very weak, and I mean, last time I rode him as a 2-year-old, he finished last at Newmarket, but he was like a giraffe on ice. He was just all legs and he was growing into himself. But this year he's blossomed. He's a bigger, stronger 3-year-old, and he's still got a lot of progression in him. So I was delighted with his first run at Kempton. He ran a Derby trial at Kempton. We had a wide draw. and I dropped him in that day, and he finished really well. He was second to Berlin Tango, and I was expecting a big run at Ascot. I was quite surprised at his turn of foot. He really quickened when I asked him. He took me to the front probably a little bit early, but I had to make a move to take a gap on the turn, or else I would have got shuffled back. And I was really surprised at how he'd progressed from one race to the next. And he impressed me. Till you've come round that hill at racing speed, you never really know if a horse will handle it truly. But he's the type of horse, he's quite athletic and he travels well. And more importantly, he switches off. The Derby's difficult because there's normally a bit of a rush on early to get a good position, and you can kind of do that with him, and then he'll drop the bridle again. So that's most important for me. If you get a horse that pulls hard for most of the way, or it's quite difficult, but he will switch off and he will travel then. So he should. There's no reason why he shouldn't handle it.
Well, that was Martin Dwyer talking about his hopes for Pile Driver this year in the race. Dave, is it possible that we could have another fairy tale success for a smaller stable for William Muir?
I think it's unlikely. I'd love to see it, I must say. I think that Pile Driver's strength is probably also his weakness. In an abnormal year, he's probably the horse who's going to have more street wisdom than a few of the others. Arthur's Kingdom in the King Edward VII, when he got to Pile Driver's backside, his quarters, the winner pulled away again to win by a couple of lengths. So on the one hand, I think he's probably going to be he's already established a level of street wisdom, professionalism, if you like. But on the other hand, there will be horses who are more likely raced who have got greater scope for improvement. I think he's unlikely. I thought that Mohican Heights was interesting as a bigger priced horse. I think that if we get quicker ground at Epsom, that'll help him. I thought that at two, what he did pointed to his being a very good horse over middle distances at three. With regard to Russian Emperor, I think he'll relish the trip. Be interesting to see which one Ryan Moore goes for. Obviously, the jockey situation also is different this year because Aidan O'Brien's Irish-based jockeys won't come over. I was disappointed with Mogul.
Yeah, let's move on to the Aidan O'Brien team. And we're going to hear from him now with some of the latest news about the horses that he hopes to be running in this year's race.
Obviously, any of them, like you have to believe in any of them, it could happen. They've all different profiles, different. They're all at different stages of their life and their training. Some are horses that were going to stay at a mile. Some of them were horses that want to go up to a mile and 6 or 2 miles. So it's going to be so interesting. I think it was like the Irish Derby. Like anything was possible to happen. And I think it's going to be the same here. And I think it'll be probably the same with everybody's horses. Like we're going to get a proper read. And hopefully, like we always hope that it's an evenly run race and each horse gets a good clear run. And that's all you can hope. And then hopefully everyone will learn at the end of it, like what stage or what way to go at all their own horses, you know. So that's all we really ever ask for. Like I said, there are all different scenarios, and it could happen with any of them. Haley, really, you know. So it's a very difficult question to answer. I suppose Mogul is the horse that was always looked at going there. But obviously, the whole circumstances for everyone's life changed when this thing came, and it would have been lovely to have two runs into him and to see. But really, this is kind of a second run now, you know. So it will be very interesting, the whole thing, I think. And we think he's progressed well at home, but you're never sure until you go and do it. And like what you said, he did have plenty to make up. We gave him kind of the toughest task by going to Ascot, and we knew that he was going to be vulnerable, but we knew that we were only going to get the one run into him. So what we were doing was risky. We were taking a chance of getting one race to do what we were hoping two would do, but we knew that we weren't going to have two. So we felt to give him a chance to win the Derby, he was going to have the toughest trial. And because he needed it, he's a horse does himself very well, and he's built like a miler. He carries plenty of condition, and he still has it, but he is tighter than he was. Listen, we're looking forward to seeing him run, and we still think he'll come forward again from it, Marcus. But he's a good, strong traveller, and we don't think he's short pace. We always thought that he would get the trip, but we're going to learn a lot about this time. I don't know what Ryan is going to write. He'll always make that decision himself late, and that'll be his prerogative to do that. He will look at the draws, and we'll talk to him and tell him what we think is happening. It's going to be difficult this year because obviously Ryan is not here, and he can't be here to see what's happening since. Obviously he will make that decision as late as he wants to make it, and then we'll put everyone else on whatever we think would suit. Like obviously we have James Doyle and William Buick and then Adam Kirby, I think and then we have some of our own people. Then we just have to decide what we want to do that way, because if the lads go there, the way the restrictions at the moment is that they can't ride for 2 weeks. So I think that the Thursday after, there's a chance that some of these restrictions might be lifted, but then there's also a chance that they won't. So if they're not lifted, they won't be able to ride until after Irish Oaks Day. And if they are lifted, they might be able to ride the following weekend. So it's all just a little bit up there at the moment. And I suppose we want to wait and see what's going to happen on the Wednesday or the Thursday after. And I know it's that there's another phase supposed to change then, but it's not. I suppose it'll depend on what Tony and all the people decide and see what they want to do here in Ireland, you know. So it's just all a little bit up in the air at the moment.
Well, that was Aidan O'Brien talking about some of his Derby possibles this year. Dave just mentioned Russian Emperor and being a bit disappointed by Mogul. Ben, what comes out top of the Aidan O'Brien team on the time form ratings at the moment?
It would be Vatican City, based on that second in the Irish 2000. And to be honest, I think he's there. He would be their best chance on paper. I didn't like the run from Mogul, to be honest. I didn't think it was a particularly good race. And even if he was 70% fit, you'd still want him to be winning that if he was going to win a Derby. And to me, he never really took Ryan Moore into the race like a horse that was really good over a mile as a 2-year-old. He just looked a bit rusty for whatever reason. Perhaps he was just really, really in need of the run, and we'll see a different animal at Epsom on Saturday. And certainly Aidan O'Brien's made comments recently that would suggest that he's going to take a massive step forward from Ascot. But I think you are placing a lot of trust in the training abilities of Aidan O'Brien if you're going to back him at about 7-1, because on that reappearance run, he's not going to be winning a Derby on that. He'll have to improve plenty.
I was very keen on Vatican City. In the immediate aftermath of the Irish Guineas, I backed him for the Derby, and then the connection seemed to go cold on that idea almost straight away, and he was very easy in the betting for a few days afterwards. Now he's re-emerged as a candidate again. I was reading about his pedigree on the dam side. She's never produced anything that's got close to staying a mile and a half, though, has she? I don't know. My initial thought after the Irish Guineas was that he appeared to be a very obvious Derby contender, but can he overcome the issues in his pedigree, Andy, which you've touched upon in your RacingTV.com column too?
It's an unknown for us all, Will, isn't it, really? I mean, all his siblings and all his close relatives, they were milers and 10 furlong horses and, you know, very capable animals, which clearly he is. He's very lightly raced, isn't he? I was reading Chris Cook wrote a column in the Guardian. We spoke with Aidan, and I think Aidan sort of intimated that Ryan might ride Vatican City in as much as, you know, we can be sure about these things. But he did seem quite positive about the horse, and whether they, you know, he's got a sexy horse, isn't he, really? And I think Aidan's whole team really just lacks a superstar. Going back to Mogul, I think he's a brother to Japan, and Japan before last year's Derby ran a very similar race to him in the Dante, in that he was well beat that day and then come out a couple of weeks later and was beaten about half a length in the Derby. I wouldn't be surprised if Mogul's similar again. I'm sure they'd have got plenty of work into him back at Ballydore. They wanted to run him over the mile and a half to make sure he had a proper examination. I wouldn't discount him. He ticks quite a few boxes for me, Mogul, albeit he was disappointed on the day.
Looks like Aidan's going to run 5 or 6, doesn't it, Dave? Which means we'll probably have them spread out. He usually has a couple at the front, a couple in the middle, a couple at the back. Do you think that's
attending the favourite? Only joking.
If you were plotting up Vatican City, where would you ride a possible doubtful stayer who we've seen has got a decent turn of kick over a mile?
I think I'd probably ride him at the back, but I mean it depends on what they're going to do with the pace. It's basically in Ballydoyle's gift probably to control that, given the number of runners that they've got. I like Vatican City. I thought that amid all the the brouhaha over the team tactics or not in the Irish 2000 Guineas, that move down the outside of Lopi Fernandez and Shamie Heffernan, the one horse that it did absolutely do for his chance was Vatican City. It created a gap of sorts for Siskin, on whom Colin Keane barged his way out. Richard Forrestal put it brilliantly in the Racing Post that he was living on the edge of the law. But to continue that analogy, there was a prison cell was where Vatican City was, and he had absolutely no way out of that. You're taking a chance with a pedigree, obviously a brother to the likes of Glen Eagles and Marvelous Happily. That he's going to have to do something the others haven't. But I liked him more than I like the other Ballydoyle horses. I think Andy's point about Mowgli is very very relevant. Russian Emperor, I think, will thrive for the trip. I'm not quite sure he's got star quality. I should mention Highland Chief. I didn't mention him in Royal Ascot about when we were talking about the Royal Ascot horses. And it's even in an abnormal year, from a horse to go from a handicap to win the Derby is very rare. But to return to the Aidan O'Brien clutch, I thought that Vatican City was the most appealing.
OK, it's time to put our cards on the table. What I want to know from you three gents is, have you had a bet on the race yet? And if not, are you likely to be having one between now and the big day? Andy, what's carrying your cash so far?
I have. Just in the last couple of weeks, I got involved with the anti-post markets on a well-known betting exchange. And I've plumped for Rafe Beckett's Max Vega, who comes in very much under the radar. I didn't know if he was going to run or not. Went back at him, so I'm relieved. I was relieved to see him amongst the entries and be even more relieved if I see his name now on Thursday. He ran in the rearranged classic trial at Kempton. Didn't look at home on ill weather, went wide. They went a steady pace. I put a line through that run. If you look at his two-year-old form, the Zetland Stakes form is absolutely rock solid. If you go through every single horse after that, right down to, I think, the seventh horse, they've all come out and franked it in a big way. And it ties in with a lot of the horses at the front of the market. Now, Max Vega's 50-1. So at that price, I can't resist him. The two things against him: A, he's not the biggest. We might have seen the best of him at two. He might not have trained on. If we look at that and the ground, if it was very fast on Saturday, that would be a slight niggle in that he's sort of run on softish ground. But he'll stay a mile and a half down his head. I think his physique, he'll absolutely whiz round Epsom no problem. At 50-1, I thought in an open year, he was worth a stab.
Yeah, as you say, 50-1 currently with Unibet ahead of Saturday's race. Dave, have you invested yet on the race?
I haven't actually, no. I think if there's a star in the race, it's English King. I think that if I had a free bet now, I would probably back Vatican City, and I think at the bigger prices, Mohican Heights was. I expect him to show to better effect than he did at Royal Ascot.
Yeah, stable just showing a bit more signs of life now in the last couple of weeks. David Simcox, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, and I thought that even though he was beaten there and he lost his unbeaten record, as I say, I think he'll show to better effect on Saturday.
And Ben, have you dabbled on the anti-post market to this point?
I backed Cameco at 4-1 very recently. I think that's a good price. As I said earlier, I think really he should be clear favourite. The Guineas is an above average Guineas by all accounts. I think he overcame trouble to win it. I think it's almost a bit unheard of that you'd get a horse win the Guineas with a bit in hand in what looked a good renewal and not be sent off favourite for the Derby. Even with those stamina doubts in mind, I think he should be favourite, Cameco. So I'm a big fan of him. I've thought for a while that Aidan O'Brien has possibly not had a proper Derby horse for this year for a little while, and I think that view's only really got stronger and stronger as the season's gone on. I think of his, Vatican City's the most interesting, but there are more stamina doubts for him getting the mile and a half than you've got for Kamiko. I think there's more encouragement that Kamiko will stay, and Vatican City, it's interesting with the tactics. If they do decide Vatican City is the number one Ballydoyle runner, are we going to get the scenario where they're stacking them up in front? And if so, is it going to be a messy race where a turn of foot's going to win it? If so, we've got a Guineas winner in there in Kamiko that could be seen to very good effect if that is the scenario that does play out. So we'll wait and see. Also, I think if you're after a sort of side bet or something else that you don't want to back the main horses to win the race, I thought Mohican Heights had a really good chance of reversing that form with Pile Driver from Ascot. I don't know if anyone's into match betting and that sort of thing, but I can certainly see Mohican Heights reversing that form. Andrea Azzini effectively rode Mohican Heights to beat Mogul and tracked the wrong horse through, and by that point Pile Driver had just whizzed through on the rail and was gone. So I suspect that Mohican Heights will reverse that form on Saturday, and might be a bet if you can get on with that sort of market. But overall, Kamiko, I think it should be favourite.
Well, it's been a bit of an upside down season so far, and I'm sure there is still more drama to come on Saturday. Don't forget, all seven races at Epsom on Saturday will be live on Racing TV. 4:55 p.m. is scheduled off time for the Investec Derby, and then we've got the Coral Eclipse the day after at Sandown. It really is a weekend of treats. Thanks so much to my three panellists for joining me here to discuss the Investec Derby, and the best of luck with whatever you are punting or looking forward to this weekend.